3 months later, Margaret was sitting out on the front porch. And Yutama walked by, and I was talking to Margaret, and she said, "She saved my life, you know." That's what we're talking about here. I remember the sliding doors opened because these are public places. They're not home. And as people are trying to change them, they're trying to imitate home and call it home-like or call it neighborhoods, but they're not creating homes. And we've got to create home. And that doesn't include sliding doors that let you walk into people's lives and make a interstate highway out of their halls, their bedroom halls. Bedroom halls are supposed to be privacy barriers. But anyway, it opened for me, and I stepped in, and I just caught this whiff that almost knocked me out. And I heard this sound. And it was distant. I thought a dog had been hit out front. But it didn't stop. And so they gave me a tour. And we went through the place. And the further we went into the organization, the louder that sound got. And then we went down on the lower level, and it was loud. And then we went clear into the far corner of the lower level, and it was ear screeching. And I looked, and there in a Jerry chair facing the corner of the wall was this small Asian woman, didn't weigh 90 pounds. And her hair was perfectly combed. Her skin was beautiful. They had cared for her body routinely. And like most everybody else, I had the first thought, which I'm embarrassed of. It's learned insensitivity. That's what this whole healthcare thing is. It's learned insensitivity. My first thought was, how do they stand that? Because, you know, I was picturing people living with that. And then I was also thinking, well, she's sick. She has acute dementia. That's why she's here. So how do they stand that? And so I asked the person giving me the tour, how long has she been doing that? And he said, well, she doesn't do it all the time, but most of the time. And I said, well, but how long has she been doing it? He said, well, longer than I've been here. And I said, how long have you been here? And he said, 4 years.
4 years.
And I left there, unmoved by what this woman was experiencing. And I left there with the predominant impression. And I'm so embarrassed of this, is, oh my gosh, how are we going to deal with that when she moves over to the new place? And I didn't give her another thought. Because we're used to, in these One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest environments, even if they're wallpapered and carpeted, even if we hang a chandelier above the nurse's station, we're used to hearing things like, help! You know what I'm talking about? Help! Do you know what that means? Took me 8 years to figure this out. You know what that means? They need help. Literally. They need help. So anyway, moving day came. It was about a year later. And we moved into these new houses. I'll never forget it because this is another mistake we make as leaders. We have to know what we're doing before we'll embark. We have to have the pathway, the critical path, the map, so that I can feel competent. That was one of my first growth steps, was I had no idea what we were doing. I just knew we had to involve everybody in it. And everybody was involved in it, and moving day came. And everybody was moving in to the room of their choice based on who they wanted to live by, who they loved, who they wanted to be on staff, which staff members wanted to make sure they were with which resident. It was all driven by the relationships. And we were moving in. It was on a Tuesday morning, and there were boxes going every which way and people going every which way. And I froze because it hit me for the first time that we didn't know what the hell we were doing. None of our systems in the old way would work, and we were driving on pure fumes of passion, which I highly recommend, by the way. But I froze because it suddenly hit me that somebody might get hurt. that with all the best of intentions, somebody might get hurt, and I literally froze. And our driver, who was from Jamaica, was holding a box, and he walked up to me, and he said, Steve, you're the only one not doing anything. Can you pick up that box and take it down to Mrs. Smith's room? So I kind of came out of my reverie, and I did. But what we experienced over that immediate month and 2 months that has continued to deepen and have crushed moments and backslides and crushed moments and backslides was that organic life began to occur. And the pinnacle moment for that, that represented many awakenings that I could spend the rest of the day telling you about, was I stopped by Potosik House 3 weeks or so after we had opened, and I rang the doorbell. And I was greeted by a staff member. And I immediately noticed that the people in the house felt a sense of being a host, which, again, shouldn't be a big deal. But they felt a responsibility to me as a visitor coming in. Would I like some coffee? And I smelled bacon. I didn't smell piss. I smelled eggs. I heard the sounds of home. I heard silverware being washed in the sink. I heard chatter, conversation, people talking to each other, people that lived there that talked to each other. Have you noticed how in these places that people will be lined up and nobody's talking to each other? People were having conversation, but all of it faded from view because about from here to you sat this Asian woman, Lee Chung Hai. And she was seated at the table. I can never tell this story. She was seated at the table, and she wasn't screaming. She was smiling. I mean, she had this most beautiful, peaceful look on her face. And our eyes locked, and I saw nothing else. And I stepped towards her, and as I got closer, that smile just glowed, and she went. And she bowed, and I bowed back. And then I had to run out of that house because it hit me that she wasn't screaming because she was sick. She was screaming because we are. We're the sick ones. Do you hear that? So in closing, I want to challenge all of us. And I'm trying to challenge myself every day. I'm my worst enemy almost every day. Is that we've got to come to grips with the fact, not as a criticism, but as a growth opportunity, that more than likely we're the biggest lid on the organization. Because everything we've been taught is now under question. Everything we've been taught on how to manage versus lead is now under question. I mentioned, maybe, I've forgotten what I've said, but I was talking with the hospital CEO, I don't think I did mention this, a couple of weeks ago, and he said, you know, the issue is now, all the fundamentals are changing. And I disagree with that. I think the thing is that we've gotten away from the fundamentals for so long by institutional, unnatural approaches in every expression of our healthcare delivery system, that what's changing is an awakening to return to the fundamentals. And we've got to find them, and we've got to hang on to them, and we've got to stop being implementers and directors of our new directions and getting buy-in from staff. I hate that word. Buy-in means I'm selling something. And I get that. How do you get buy-in? Well, you don't sell. You co-create. And that as leaders, we've got to bring people together for vision and start together to create it and create the teams of people who will own the responsibility for it. And our job is to truly help people get the resources and education or wisdom or whatever they need to grow into this vision. The key will never be us. It will never be us. And the success will not be ours until it becomes everybody else's. And that's the deliverance that we've got to make. We've got to step out of this artificial womb of safety in control and architecture of others and become co-creators and resource bearers to make new lives for tomorrow. God bless you.